And here we are again. It's another mobile phone conference get-together shindig at the XL Centre. This time, it's called Nokia World, specifically Nokia World 2010, or 2010 if you're Arthur C. Clarke, and the Nokia Developer Summit. The All About Symbian team is here doing our best for coverage. We have David Gilson.
Hello, everybody.
We have Rafe Blanford.
Hello, everybody.
And we have Richard Blair. Hello, Richard.
Hi there.
Richard, ours as well. I'll keep an eye on all the developer stuff flying over from Australia, making fourth appearance on the podcast.
Possibly even fewer than that, actually.
And well, so we're here just outside. The doors are getting ready to open. We're smart. We've got a rough idea what's going on. But what I wanted to ask you guys now was one word of what you think the next 2 days are going to be like. And then obviously expand on that word. But if you were to tag what you think is going to happen, what would you say? David, what are you first?
My one word for this conference would be awkward, with the corporate departures at the top of Nokia.
Now, this is obviously big. When we've had OPK basically step aside for Stephen Ellop to come in, and we've had the news yesterday, Mansi van Jochen putting in his 6 months notice as well. But to be fair, it does mean that Nokia World can have a great big black line drawn right underneath it and go, you know what, we're putting the handbrake on, here we go, we're changing direction, whack.
Yeah, that's right. This is the least awkward option. There wasn't a good way to do it, and at least doing it this way, everyone's clear on what's happening. But nonetheless, awkward.
Well, I'd probably say cute. I think.
Now, do you mean cute as in, oh, little fluffy bunny rabbit with the gun, or do you mean QT?
I mean QT, as in cute. I think that's probably going to play quite a significant role in terms of the developer summit. Not to forget that there's also going to be some interesting stuff coming up in terms of web development as well. As quite clearly, Nokia have a very strong two-pronged approach to their development now through Qt and through the web runtime. And it should be interesting to see what they've got to say about those two technologies at the show.
Of course, the other big challenge that they have in the developer environments is getting developers to actually use them. And the people using Nokia has dwindled over the time. They've moved to other platforms and they've just given up. So how do you think they're going to convince them to start using Qt and web runtime?
Well, I think the thing with Qt, quite clearly one of the strategies they're running out with Qt is to encourage those Qt developers who've been working on the desktop to come to Symbian and Migo. In terms of web, I think web to a certain extent is just going to be driven by volume. Web developers are able to incorporate their technology into applications for Nokia devices relatively straightforwardly, and it's going to be convincing people that there's actually the volume out there, which, as we all know, is something that they have difficulty convincing, even though the numbers say something entirely different.
Symbian 3.
That's two words, or is it one word with the branding or whatever?
It's one word in the branding, at least. That's what the device is going to be about today, and this is the big push for Symbian 3 that Nokia are going to be doing today at Nokia World.
Do you think that there's too much expectation placed on the N8 and the launch power that this device is going to have?
The N8 is just like any other device. It can only do what it can do. People are expecting a resurgence from Nokia, but I think it's fair to say with the new version of the platform, a new hardware family, it is going to significantly kick things up. But I think every time there are conferences like this, every time there's a new device, the expectations always exceed the reality because people don't always understand all the technical bits involved. So yeah, maybe it's going to be overhyped, but I do think this is a really big step up, and the same can be said of the rest of the Symbian 3 devices.
Okay, so the doors are opening, so we're heading in now. Very briefly, guys, what are you all heading off to see straight away? What's the big thing in your diary?
A big thing in my diary is to go and have a look at the Qt sessions.
And we're going in to do coverage of the keynote speeches to give everyone commentary and insight.
And I'll be trying to do everything.
And I will just sit here, bounce around with the microphone. I like this deal. Right, shall we all go in as well? So we're inside the keynote. It's dark, it's dank, it's mysterious. If you ever wonder what the inside of a Martian war machine would look like, probably a bit like this, but replacing all the blue with the red. Joining me now, Mark Squires.
Good morning, how are you?
You're not going to tell me anything, are you?
Not at this stage, no. There's many ways to leave a company. On the end of a microphone probably is not the best one.
Well, let's start with that one, because quite a few people are leaving the company. So did they have a raffle to decide who was going to do the keynote this morning?
Oh, that's a bit below the belt.
It was, yeah.
I don't know. I think change is a natural part of moving on with any company, and we've got so much to sort of say today that I think probably what you're going to see is going to surprise a lot of people. I mean, the story of this whole event is going to be Symbian. Personally, as one of the beta testers for the architecture of the N8, there's so much to tell people. I'm looking forward to spending some time just showing people that device and the other things we've got to show you in a few minutes.
Do you think you're going to have a rough ride from the press? You look at the N8 and go, oh, it just looks just like the last one.
I don't think so, because I think beauty's only skin deep. I mean, if you actually dive into the device, when you get past the general look and feel and you actually start using it, it's the usability that's gone through the roof, the speed, the applications, and a lot of the intuitive stuff. The single tap takes you a long way home, but without all of the other double stuff that we know about.
Yeah. Give us some numbers about the conference. So how many delegates you got in here? How much floor space, stands, partners? What's the sort of raw bingo numbers that we can use?
I mean, the raw number is that we're sold out. I mean, there's going to be more than 3,000 people here today. Obviously, as well as this event, next door to us, we've got the Nokia Developer Summit, and there's going to be lots to cover from that as well. In terms of how many people on the floor, I don't know, but you know how big XL is, and the place is packed to the rafters.
Well, there you go, Mark. I'll let you get on with the preparation. Can you just point me to where the coffee is?
Yes, mate, it's just outside. We passed it on the way in.
Oh, no! So I finally have my coffee, the keynotes are over, and there's a bit of fire in Nokia's belly. Rafe is, of course, dealing with Nicholas and Ansi, but joining myself and you all listening out there on the podcast, we have Len Pryor from Nokia. Hello, Len.
Hey, how are you?
And nice, that accent's not Finnish, is it?
No, I'm good old North American.
And you, I was looking through the bio, Microsoft, Skype, yep. eBay, yep. Those are strong Silicon Valley companies.
Yeah, they're pretty well known, to say the least, yeah.
So, well, before we, I mean, you've got all the phones out in front of me, and I'm, yep. You know, I'm doing that whole typical mad thing of I'm not looking down here. No, I'm looking at the eyes, honestly. What attracted you to Nokia in the first place?
You know, it's kind of fun. It's a great question. I came to Nokia 3 years ago to be a part of the transformation that you're seeing take place all around us. Obviously, you've read my bio. I've spent most of my career, all of my career in software, in the United States, with the exception of my time at Skype, where I was in Estonia and London. And what kind of funny, when I went to Estonia and I went to London and worked for Skype, I got my head out of the valley. And I got my head into a world where software was so much more powerful when the whole world got motivated by it and got excited by it. And I spent a lot of time in Asia, in Japan, Taiwan, China, all over Europe, you know, places like Poland, seeing that, you know, software was changing the way people communicated. And that was a really powerful shift. And Nokia is really the only company that's been positioned to really take advantage of this shift to two things. One, the internet being the most powerful communications tool on the planet, and two, having the global reach and the ability to reach people all around the world with that technology. And I fell in love with that. I just had to get my head out of the valley and to think about the rest of the world. And Nokia was this amazing opportunity to do that. So when the services group was formed and the OV strategy came along, Nokia asked me to join and to be a part of this. And I jumped at it because it was a very unique opportunity to be a part of taking this global opportunity and really connecting people through software and through services. So that's why I'm here.
And as I said there earlier, we've got the new devices here in front of us, C6, C7, N8. Very briefly, actually, no, let's go back one. First time you got your hands on one of these, I'm guessing would have been one of the early N8s. Roughly when was that?
Well, let's see. The first N8 I held was probably a couple of months ago, last time.
And what was the initial reaction? Because we're hearing from Anthony today, you have to test drive it first, yeah. Like a car. What was it like?
It's a beautiful piece of hardware. You've held one, and you've got one right here in front of you. But if you haven't held one, the best thing I can say is it's aluminum or aluminium, depending on how you say the word. It is a beautifully handcrafted, extruded aluminum casing. It feels incredibly solid. It has a very unique shape and a very bright 3-inch screen on it. It's a beautiful piece of hardware to hold in your hand. So my first reaction was, what a unique-looking piece of hardware. And what a beautifully made piece of hardware. And then when I turned it on and started using Symbian 3, my first reaction was, cool. This is really moving in a really wonderful direction. There's so much momentum coming back to Symbian now. Seeing the UI cleaned up and really brought around, optimized around the touchscreen experience was super cool for me. Seeing the innovations that have gone into things like the Ovi Store, the new messaging client, the new music client, it's really becoming a very vibrant and fun user experience again. And I love it. I think it's
fantastic. So you've got the N8 there, but you've also got the other devices in there. I think a lot of attention is going to be paid to the E7, which superficially looks pretty much like the N8. And in terms of size, it's slightly, about a millimeter or two wider and a millimeter higher?
Millimeter higher, a millimeter or two wider. But looks, you're right. The industrial design language is fundamentally the same. Both of them have the sort of angled rounded corners at the top and the bottom with the ports at the top. The big difference, though, is this one has a 4-inch screen, which is really beautiful, bright 4-inch screen, and then it pops up to reveal a very, very usable keyboard. In fact, if you hold it in your hand, it's really well balanced to type on, and quite nice key feel as well for a very flat keyboard.
And it's a very similar sort of origami, for want of a better word, to the N97, so you've got that spine at the back, so you can tap, and this one does tip over a little bit, but it pops back.
Pops back quite nicely.
Right. Obviously, it doesn't say communicator on it, but you and I know it's a 9,000 redux from 15 years on in the time, isn't it?
It's certainly, as Ansi alluded, grown out of the heritage of those devices that are about mobile productivity with a keyboard and hyper-connected devices with a very capable OS.
But the ones that always attract me, the ones that go lower down the value chain, but still keeping the value. So the C6 and the C7 that we've got here. Yeah. Alluded to with the blacker-than-black screen. Did nobody read Spinal Tap?
No. I thought that was pretty funny, actually. I thought the way that turned out on stage was really funny. It's called the CBDB screen, which is a polarized screen with very, very intense blacks that come through it. So it's got wonderful glare reduction, very beautiful to look at. It's a really striking screen that I think you almost have to see in person to appreciate.
The other thing, given that you're a VP in music, it's only fair that we talk about the music player, which, as listeners to the podcast from either side, well, no, I'm a great believer that the music app does have the ecosystem of the entire phone in one. It has to deal with connectivity. It has to deal with, you know, huge amounts of information, speed of navigation and such like. And it's one of the applications that's had a ground-up rewrite for Symbian 3?
Yeah, it's been significantly rewritten for Symbian 3.
How much of the code is left over and how much would be new from 5th edition?
I'm really not sure, actually. It's derivative from the Symbian 5 platform. I think the real focus of it is making it easier to manage your music and find your music, as well as the basics, like file speed transfer. Right, file transfer speed when sideloading a large library can be a bit challenging sometimes on some of the lower end devices, especially. These new devices have the fastest bus yet, so transfer speeds are fantastic. You move songs over, they just seem to pop over, you know, a song a second onto your device. Very, very good high speed transfer, which is fantastic. Great sound quality, support for all the codecs. But this visual browsing metaphor of being able to take your library and go through it visually very quickly is probably one of the coolest things. It's 60 frames per second animation, very smooth and easy to look through, and is great for managing a large library. So if you have Comes With Music or Ovi Music Unlimited, you've downloaded a large collection or you've got your own collection of MP3s, now it's really easy to keep those on the device and quickly find what you're looking for.
Now, the cynic would say that looks awfully like CoverFlow, but with slight changes for the patent lawyers.
What it is, you know, what we think is the best metaphor for browsing through your library, which is something that is a metaphor that people can relate to, which is we have all had, you know, CDs and albums in our living rooms and, you know, sitting in our bedrooms and our dorm rooms for years, and we all used to come over and flip through each other's records, and it was a social activity. And this metaphor is actually so fantastic for that.
So how many tracks have you got? We're looking at the E7 here. How many tracks have you got on there?
This one I've only got probably about 400-500 tracks on it right now on this E7, but the device has 16 gigs of storage, so that'll hold up to about 5,000 songs.
And what about all the ancillary stuff, things like podcast support and audio streaming and such like? Does that all come under the new player as well?
No, it's not all in the new player. We still have a separate application for radio and podcasting, but I'm sure you'll see more and more of this stuff come together over time.
What about internet radio? Because that was something that never made the jump to fifth from third.
Yeah,
is it still not made the jump?
It's still not made the jump. We have FM radio, but no internet radio in the new devices running Symbian 3.
Any plans for that in the future? feature, or is that something that's being left to third parties like Spontronic?
Right now, we have it shipping still in Symbian 3.2 devices and some of our QWERTY devices today, like the E72. But we're looking at possibly carrying this forward based on customer feedback.
So there you go, everybody. You write nice letters, and they do listen. It just takes a bit of time. Len,
yeah.
Phones aside,
yeah.
And looking back at Nokia as a whole, I did kind of allude earlier that there seemed to be a bit of fire in the bellies of Nicholas and Ansi at the keynote. I mean, is that something that's being reflected through the whole company and the structure? Is it a quiet confidence, or is it a brash arrogance?
I hope it's not brash arrogance, and I hope it wasn't perceived that way. What we see here is a real momentum in the company right now. There's a lot of momentum. There's a lot of momentum behind the new product portfolio. We're really excited about the changes that are happening all across the company. And we started on a transformation of the company into a services and software, as well as device manufacturer to create great solutions about 3 years ago now. And that momentum is really picking up steam. With products like Symbian 3, we've got a great new foundation. Our services have evolved and matured in really wonderful ways. And I hope, you know, that momentum and that excitement that Nicholas and Ansi were portraying, that's all coming from everyday employees as well. We're all excited about where we're headed and the opportunities ahead of us. The game is still very, very early.
You can give Silicon Valley one message and they'll accept it. What do you tell them?
I think there's it's not even a message for Silicon Valley, it's a message for the world, which is think about the world. Choice and opportunity and serving people in ways that make sense to them is probably one of the most powerful things that Nokia does, and all of us can do to change people's lives, is to make technology accessible. As Ansi said this morning, it's not about technology, it's about what you do with technology. And making it extremely human and extremely impactful on the world is the most important thing you can do.
Len, thanks for your time.
Thank you very much, Ewan. Pleasure to meet you.
Joined here on the podcast by someone who's not employed by Nokia. From Reuters, we have Eliko Elia. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Hello. So,
Reuters, huge organization, but you've got to focus specifically on mobile there, haven't you?
Absolutely. So I focus on the consumer side of Reuters Mobile and all of our applications and mobile services and websites.
So what sort of success have Reuters have in specifically in mobile?
An enormous success. We've had applications that have won awards. We have many thousands of users worldwide that use our applications on every single platform there is, and many, many successes.
So obviously yourself, part of that role, heavily embedded in all the stuff that's going on in mobile here at Nokia World. Sum it up for me in a sentence.
Nokia World 2010, in a sentence. Nokia is back, apparently.
Oh, I like that. The apparently at the end, because Nokia's back is, of course, how they finished off the keynote. Why the apparently then, Eliko?
Because as I was talking to a few people sitting around having a coffee, words are not enough anymore. Yes, they have absolutely fantastic devices. Yes, they are purportedly the best cameras in a camera phone. But we still need to get them behind the developers more, behind the users more, behind the websites more, behind the services that they provide through their devices more, and get them much more engaged. They're doing very well at it, but it needs to go further and further and further.
Are you seeing any obvious mistakes in what they've got planned for the next year in that strategy of going after and getting the stories, the developers and the users on board?
I don't think they've been open enough about what they've got planned for the next year, 2 years.
So when you have an organization as large as Nokia, when it has that Finnish reticence, obviously one of the decisions in bringing Stephen Elop on board is the fact that he's outside of that sort of mindset. Do you think that's a result of just Nokia's heritage and they were always going to be in this situation?
They don't particularly like talking about themselves in a PR sense of the word, I don't believe. I think that could well be a Finnish thing.
So given that finish, how much difference do you think Elop can make?
It can make a tremendous amount of difference. Not necessarily because he's just not from Nokia or not up through the ranks of Nokia, but because it does bring a different outlook on what they need to do and what they need to produce. If you look at Microsoft over the last few years, where everyone basically wrote them off with Windows 6.5, Windows Phone 6.5, it's interesting to, and it's a very specifically English thing to say, when you talk to anyone who's actually seen a new Windows 7 device, they basically say, oh, it's not bad, which in English means it's actually pretty damn good. So that sort of thinking where you've gone from a write-off to, oh, it's not bad, Nokia definitely need. Even though they are most definitely not a write-off.
Right, so bringing it back to the Reuters, what do Reuters, the mobile dev team, what did they want to see from Nokia in the next year?
Easier development processes. They just announced that that signing is now free and they will do it for us. Anything that makes it much easier for us to develop applications for all of their platforms has got to be a win for us. I don't have the money to be able to spend on enormous development teams.
Nicole, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
It seems to be the question that certainly Steve is pestering me on Skype all day. What is it? How does it work? What is it? How does it work? Normally you can ignore those comments, but not when it's Steve and he's going, what is this clear black display, note to Spinal Tap, blacker than black screen that's been announced this morning? Joining me to hopefully give us a little bit more of an insight and clear the issue, as it were, bad pun, but it's late, I'm sorry, Yanni Jakobsen, head of Symbian Software Priorities and the N8.
Yes, right.
So lots of hats, everything coming to fruition today. You must be happy you've made it.
I am, definitely. Very proud.
Okay, we will talk about the N8 in a second, but first of all, get Steve off my back. What is clear black display technology?
So it's basically a film that we put on top of the display or on the window and below the glass, and it's filling out the whole area. And what it enables you to do is basically that it polarizes, and which means that specifically in really bright light conditions, outdoor conditions, you will be able to see what's going on in the screen and still have the color depth that we know that we are sometimes missing in smartphones in general when you are in outdoor conditions.
Now, the other thing there is clear black. I mean, as you were saying, it's blacker than black. So, I mean, what are you blocking parts of the screen and only letting the color through? Or?
No, it's just emphasizing the depth of the colors.
It's bringing up the colors, right? So it's like saturation in Photoshop. Then you're turning the saturation up.
It's kind of like if you have polarizing glasses. It's mm-hmm. the same kind of technology. In some ways, the easiest way to understand it, at least.
So what does this go on top of Super AMOLED, or is this a different offshoot of the technology? What sort of screen can it go on?
It's a film that goes on top of the display, basically, but underneath the glass. So you have a layer in between.
It's on AMOLED, non-AMOLED screens as well?
Yes.
So what devices is it actually on at the moment that have been announced today?
So it's on C6 and E7.
C6 and E7. Not the C7 and not the N8.
Yes.
So two out of... And as a product manager of the N8, do you now go, oh, I wanted that?
I mean, that would have been nice, of course, but there was a technology availability. We were basically not ready with the technology at that time, and that's why it's not on N8.
Okay. Now, the N8 itself, it's... The perception is it's been delayed until it's ready. It's obviously ready now. What was the biggest holdup in the... Was it software? Was it hardware?
I think it's been very important for us that we get quality absolutely right on both sides, so both on the hardware side and on the software side. So it's definitely a combination of both that we don't want to put it out into our hands of the consumers before it's absolutely...
Nani, thanks for your time.
You're welcome.
So joined now by familiar face Oren Levine.
There we go.
But you've got a different job title. You're still bouncing around inside the corporate structure up there. Oren, where are you now?
So I just joined Forum Nokia to drive the web developer portfolio within Forum, which I'm sure we're all familiar with.
Okay, and you're here at Nokia World, and you're saying to me earlier that you're here to show what people can do now with all the web tools that are being provided.
That's exactly right. Yeah, so we're here. I mean, I don't know if you've seen the schedule for the Nokia Developer Summit. So we're really, what we've done in Nokia is we've made the developer offering much simpler overall. And we're really focusing on three core technologies. So we have native development, we have web development, and we have Java development, really focused on like the Series 40 and lower end devices. So it makes life easier for us because that means we focus on three things. And the new website focuses on three things. So I'm driving the second of those. So I'm going to be talking all about web. We have a session today devoted to web development for really focused on current Nokia devices.
What's the one thing, apart from the Nokia music drifting in over the background, what's the one thing that gets you really excited about web dev on the Nokia now?
Well, the exciting thing I think about web development is this idea that I can take the same stuff that I used to write a web page, which is, you know, HTML and JavaScript and CSS, and use that same stuff to write real applications. So, you know, not just a web page that does basic web page stuff, but I can talk to the device, I can talk to location, I can talk to the contacts, you know, I can show videos, I can start to do really cool application-like stuff, but still using the same basic web stuff that I use to design a regular website. I think that's pretty exciting.
So how do you get that story over to the developers who now in the mobile space, for whatever reason, American advertising, are concentrating on applications, bespoke, native, on the device, big, huge, complicated apps? How are you getting the story over to them?
Well, I mean, I think we're trying to get the story to them by just showing them what they can do, and that's what we're doing today. We're just going to say, look, you know, we have... Here's the stuff. I mean, we've had tools out there for a while that let you build those. So that should be, you know, a surprise. I think it's more a matter of just showing people what they can do, showing the examples, diving into the code, and just proving that it really works, and then showing the real devices where stuff works on.
Taking some of the stuff that you've seen come back from the developers, what's the most obscure thing you've seen done using the web code? You just looked at it and went, really?
That's interesting. I have to admit, I probably haven't seen a lot of the obscure stuff. I've seen some really impressive stuff, not necessarily obscure stuff. I mean, of course, I can't. It's hard to show you the. I can't show you the demo on the podcast here, but I have to bring it up and talk through it while I'm showing. But I mean, even basic stuff. Let's see if this works. You know, we have some folks who built a really nice widget for OpenTable, the reservation service. And it seems reasonably basic. I can do this on the web. What I can't do with the OpenTable website is I can't, you know, read location to have it automatically find my location. I can't make a restaurant reservation, have it saved automatically to my device calendar, send the reservation as an SMS to a friend. All that stuff I can do with the widget. So now I've taken the basic functionality of the website, which is pretty cool, but I can add all these other things to it and make it a really powerful application on the phone, and it's still HTML and JavaScript.
So is your focus to get existing developers to switch to web, or to get web developers to switch to Nokia and handsets?
Yes.
I like it!
Spoken like a true evangelist.
Oren, as always, it is great to find out what you're up to nowadays. Where can people get more information on the web stuff? It's Forum Nokia, yeah?
Forum.nokia.com. If they haven't seen the brand new Forum website, they should visit it and check it out. If they have seen the brand new website, it's a good chance to check it out again. And you look under Develop Web, and you'll find everything you need to know about web development.
And just to reiterate, it's free to join to get hold of all the SDKs and everything.
That's correct, absolutely.
Some people think that the key to selling a mobile phone is to have nice hardware and big specs and massive numbers. Some people think it's to do with style and substance. But I think, personally, what you need is something as addictive as crack cocaine. So, joining me now, the new digital pushers for Symbian 3. We have Peter.
Yeah, I'm Peter.
We have Michael.
Hello.
And we have Matthew.
Hello.
And you guys are from?
Rovio.
And Rovio do the insanely addictive OV Maps Challenge.
Yeah. That's right, that's right, among other games.
You've done something else, have you?
Yeah, Angry Birds.
Angry Birds, what's that?
Yeah, right. It's this game about these like birds that get really angry because of these pigs that steal their eggs.
It sounds delightful, my kids. So, for those of you who haven't, basically, it's like the old tank game where you, instead of shooting shells up, you shoot birds, and there's just lots of glass and wood and concrete structures and targets you have to hit that are the pigs.
Yeah.
And you guys have done something that very few game developers do. You've managed to not only capture the zeitgeist, but you've got the perfect learning curve, you've got the perfect build-up of adrenaline and activity, and I said digital drug pushers earlier, but the same idea of addictiveness coming back through. So, was that chance?
No, actually, the whole design process, everything was about eliminating luck out of the equation in everything that was done around Angry Birds. So it was a very, very analytic process. And what we always tell people that it's not good enough nowadays to make a great game. And we, of course, think that Angry Birds is a great game, but it's also about getting the message out and be good and preferably like great at marketing. And of course, you know, Finnish people are known for their like marketing savvy and, you know, like salesmanship and all of that and the branding capabilities.
This is great because I don't support the irony tag, so I have no idea if that's true or not.
Yeah, it's actually true and there's like no sarcasm or anything. But yeah, actually, we think that it's all about the marketing and the branding.
So Angry Birds has been on the iPhone, it's been on the iPad, there are hints of it coming to Android, it's been on the N900, mm-hmm. It's now coming to Symbian 3. So let's start with an obvious technical question. Why hasn't it been on Symbian before? Why aren't we seeing it on something like, say, the 5800?
Yeah, because the S60 fifth edition phones were basically not able to handle the physics of the game, so now finally the new S3 phones are powerful enough to have the game on it.
So what's interesting to me is that there was never any point where you thought to compromise down on the physics, or maybe reduce the level so there was less bricks or anything?
It was very important to us to always maintain the same experience for all our users. So we didn't want to disappoint anyone with making an inferior product.
Yeah, and this is also something that is very, very important, and I think we've try to look at learn from the best. It always varies from area to area, but if you look at right now, you know, product design and kind of the attention to detail, and company that is really fanatical about details, every pixel, all of that.
It's Nokia.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, as we all know, Nokia has always been.
That's sarcasm again, isn't it?
Yeah. It's the Finnish sarcasm. But yeah, I mean, of course, Apple has done a great job, and they have a great model for that. So what we try to do with Angry Birds is really pay attention to every little detail in the game, in everything. How do you find it? You know, what does it play like? All that. So we really... Okay, we looked at and did, 50-plus titles for Java and Brew and all of that stuff. And we could do, like, a Java version easily, but the experience would be not as good as we like it to be. So then we thought, okay, let's not compromise, and let's really make sure that when you play Angry Birds, be it on, like your iPhone, iPad, or now on your N8, it has to be great. It has to really be the Angry Birds experience. So let's not compromise. And the N8 is actually providing a great experience, especially, screen, the feel, everything is really right about the device from that perspective.
And you're also bringing in a new area, and with the Mighty Eagle. Now, I'm assuming this is going to be appearing in all the versions.
Yes.
Yeah. But what interests me is it's the in-app purchasing, and the fact that allows for recurring revenue from you guys, which is a brilliant business idea. Mm-hmm. But it also, you've done it in such a way that it still stays completely optional for the user.
Yes.
Yes, we have. And we wanted to still keep the same feeling with this in-app purchase as what is in the game as well. So we could have done this particular feature in many different ways, but we chose to introduce this as a new type of bird instead of, for instance, just unlocking levels, etc.
But one thing that is very important, again, with the Mighty Eagle, and coming back to the point about marketing, and actually maybe more importantly, the storytelling. So, of course, we could have done kind of like the obvious, that, oh, hey, here's some new levels, and, why don't you pay for them, in-app purchasing and all that. But we didn't want to do, we could have done this, and we could have announced today that, okay, hey, guess what, now we're announcing in-app purchasing. And then it's like, okay, whatever. So we wanted to do that in a way where we actually expose a bit more of the Angry Birds world. And that's something that a lot of people don't realize, but we actually built a lot of the backstory to Angry Birds. So we have only exposed a small, kind of like, or shown like a small glimpse into the Angry Birds world in the first game. And now with the Mighty Eagle, we're exposing a bit more. And the idea is that whenever we launch a new feature or a new game, of course, we're working on new games as well, it will expose more of the island. So there I'm like exposing a bit more about the island where we have these two dominant species, the birds and the pigs. And that's kind of like the plan all along, that we really invest a lot in the character development, everything. Again, this attention to detail. So it really has to be an experience for the users and it, not a ripoff, if you will.
So I have one final question. Mm-hmm. It's called Angry Birds. What was the name you rejected before you went for Angry Birds? Because I'm guessing that there were, like, are we going to call it Angry Birds or... So what was the other name?
Actually, the beta name was Angry Birds. It was always Angry Birds.
Yeah. No, but there was a longer version of it. Somebody wanted to have it called Angry Birds Sunday revenge.
Ah, yes.
And yeah, we didn't want to have the Sunday revenge in there after all. I mean, we felt that that sounds like it's already a sequel when it's only the first one. So there you have it.
So there we go then. Again, not quite sure if that's sarcasm or not. But guys from Rovian World, it's a great game over all the platforms. It's we've finally been able to catch up with the rest of the world. Yay! It just means I can sit down and go, look at me, and finish it all in one go. Maybe.
Yeah, with 3 stars too.
Yeah. Okay. So it's the end of Nokia World 2010, or at least it's the end of the first day. Back here at the comfy seats at the edge of the XL Centre, and joined by Rafe.
Rafe Blanford.
And David.
It's Dave Gerson, hello.
And Richard.
Richard Bloor, hi.
And me, Ewan Spencer, who's been with you for the whole podcast. Right, guys, I mean, impressions of Nokia World. I'll start with you, Richard, because you were taking the developer story that was coming out today.
Yeah, I think there's certainly there's been quite an interesting preview of a new tool that's coming up. Nokia, obviously, for web developers. A far more integrated tool with a far better capability in terms of previewing widgets, integrated debugging, and quite some interesting and exciting stuff for people who want to be building widgets for Symbian devices. The Qt story is continuing to develop and is clearly quite key. But probably the thing that was most interesting from my point of view wasn't strictly developer stuff, but it was actually the looking at what's happening in terms of advertising and promotion that Nokia are doing for new devices, where they are integrating the whole of the Ovi store and individual applications on a regional and local basis into all the advertising they're doing. So from now on, if you've got an application that's particularly relevant to Tierra del Fuego, when Nokia launched their device in that area, then they want to hear from you to get your application included in the advertising.
Essentially, it's a we'll show the developers the money play.
Oh, very much so. Very much a case of that. The other thing that was interesting about that was the fact that they are moving a lot more aggressively into driving people towards relevant content. Whether it entirely relevant is an interesting question. I have to see how it actually comes out. But for example, if you buy a new Nokia device and you've never visited the Ovi store before, but for example have logged on and registered on Nokia.com, filled in the device startup information about who you are, your age, etc., etc., then the very first time you click on the Ovi store icon, rather than presenting you with just a list of a random set of applications, they're working towards a situation where you will get delivered a specific package of applications that they think are going to be relevant to you. Or equally, if you buy an application through Ovi store and then at some point later log on to Nokia.com with your user name and ID, they'll be popping up messages saying, you bought this application on Ovi store last week. Do you know that this other application that's similar is going to be available? So there's quite clearly a very aggressive campaign being formulated, put together and rolled out that integrates applications very tightly with devices in terms of the promotion. And I think that's probably the most interesting thing from a developer perspective, because it's been an area where it's been very unclear how you push your application.
Because ultimately that comes down to what all developers are interested in, making money, because it's discovery, which is something which is a problem in every app store at the moment.
Now, we've also got David here. David, first Nokia World, first experience of that. I mean, what have you taken away from the energy and the atmosphere today?
I think it's just great how Nokia make themselves accessible to everyone and are just happy to talk to everyone who wants to know about what's going on. It's been good meeting other people in the Nokia blogging community as well. Specific things I've looked at, whereas it's the story of this show is the Symbian 3 and we've seen the new 4 devices, there have been hints towards MeeGo. In the development side, there's Qt, which is going to apply to MeeGo development. I've spoken to Navtech today, who are doing a Google Street Maps-esque mapping addition to Ovimaps at some point, and that they're even doing LiDAR mapping, so you can get 3D views, and that will be on Symbian 3 and Mega. And then I've heard from Marco Attestari, who said that there's going to be a design language applied to duos or triplets of devices, and lessons they've learned are going to be applied to Mego devices. That's not to say that all the Mego devices are going to be anodized aluminium, but there's certain things that they've learned on how to do are going to be brought forward into the new range of devices.
And today, of course, was predominantly Symbian 3, three new handsets in the N8 given its final up. And that, what David was saying about the style and the common language, was coming through as well.
Absolutely. You know, that common language was the theme with something like the E7 and the N8, but also between the C7 and the C6. And you're right, you know, Nokia World this time around has been all about Symbian, to coin a phrase. And what's interesting about that is it kind of answers the critics saying, Nokia's not interested in Symbian, it's not doing anything with it. You know, this is a massive push on Symbian. And I think what probably struck me most of all is just how compelling a collection of devices they've created in one go. I've said to a couple of people, what struck me is here you've got four devices, or, you know, three announced today plus the N8, that, you know, actually all potentially have the, you know, ability to sell well, to become hero devices, if you like. You know, that's something I haven't seen at a Nokia event for a long time. You know, it's everything from the design to the build quality, all of which is solid. And of course, you have to put them in their context. They're built to a cost on occasion. But then you've also got underlying that the singular Symbian 3 platform. You haven't got difference between the C series or the E series or whatever it happens to be. You know, there is customization going on, as Richard mentioned earlier. That's happening through applications both in OviStore but also out of the box. And, you know, those, in one sense, there's a move away from creating the customization on the hardware level. It's, you know, it's more subtle than that. I think that's great. But also seeing Symbian 3, you know, people will be able to choose a Symbian 3 device from a selection, or an operator can range all of them, and then the customer can walk out the shop with a Nokia smartphone and have a common experience across all of them. At the top end, that means, you know, you get a much more compelling hardware coupled with the advances of Symbian 3. At the mid tier, you still get that compelling software experience, you know, all the advantages we've talked about so much. But that kind of, you know, uniform offering in one go is something we haven't seen, I don't think, before. And that's what makes them, taken together, a really big step forward for Nokia. And I think, you know, a real sign of potential to come. And I had a, you know, brief chat with several Nokia executives about this, and they said, you know, this isn't necessarily about competing directly with Android and Apple, etc., etc. This is about appealing to the existing 3.1 billion Nokia users. And there is a big opportunity to get those on board with Symbian 3, and that's what it's all about. You know, we're creating an experience that everybody will want to use from our existing user base. And that's, you know, there's a subtlety there, but it is important.
What was interesting for me, staying with the devices, was that perhaps unlike previous Nokia Worlds, none of these devices you looked at and thought, why have they done that? These four devices were complementary, and any of these devices, if it had just been one phone launch today, if it had been just the C6 or just the C7 or just the E7 or just the N8, well, N8's slightly different because we already know it's out there, but any of these phones could have held their own in a single product launch.
Yeah, no, I think that's a fair comment. They would have all been good enough, and clearly the attention goes to the E7, and it's a pretty remarkable device.
Which is a shame for the C6.
Which is a shame for the C6 and the C7. You know, I was having a chat with the product manager of the C7, and some of the attention to detail that's gone in there, truly remarkable. And, you know, if you think the previous offering in those touch devices in that kind of price point was really things like the 5800, it's just such a quantum leap in design compared to what went before. You know, the new thinness, the build quality. I mean, the C7, I think it's worth mentioning specifically because it won't get the attention it deserves. Reminds me of two devices. Hold it in the hand, it's like the E71, that feel of solidity, the excellent build quality, you know, something new and fresh which you didn't have before. But then it also brings me to mind of the N73, which was, you know, a best-selling smartphone for Nokia. It wasn't the high end, but it was the one that you saw in the street all the time. I think the C7, you know, may well do that again.
I'd just say about the C6 and C7, I'm not sure, well, do you really think that those two alone would have made a Nokia world themselves? Because the C7 is, it's a great phone, but it's going to be priced lower than the N8. And obviously its camera isn't as good because the N8 is the star camera phone. So the NA and the E7 are kind of like really like hero devices, whereas the C6 and C7 may be perceived as the budget versions of the NA.
Certainly, I think the perception would be there. But if it was just the C7, yes, there would be the usual tech blogs online going, it's not a high-end device, it's not got a big enough margin. But when you look at it, it's aluminium. They would have, in the keynote, focused a lot more on the tiny touches, the red LED that's hiding in the call and mute button, the active speaker cancellation that's hiding in the battery clip at the back of the device, the thinness where it's literally, when you take the battery out between the screen and the back plate, it's only 3 or 4 millimeters. There would have been a lot more focus on that, and people would have looked at the C7, I think, and went, that is an impressive device. Here it's like, there's another device, what, there's another device. It's like having chocolate cake every single day. You remember the last biggest slice when all of the chocolate was wonderful.
Yeah, I mean, you make a good point, David. You know, the media is always going to be interested in the high-end device, but that's a perception in the media. It's important to have the full range of devices. So you're right. I think the point that Ewan was trying to bring across was that the C6 and C7 are pretty remarkable devices in their own right. And, you know, before when we've had, you know, last year's Nokia World, I think it was N97 Mini and 5230. And the 5230 got ignored, and quite rightly, because it was basically a cut-down version of the 5800. I wouldn't describe the C6 or the C7 as cut-down versions of anything. They are fresh approaches, and that's, you know, refreshing to see.
And I just say, just to have a balanced view on the C7, that it probably does deserve more attention, because it could unfairly get the perception that I've just espoused a moment ago. So, but we've all seen today how nice it is in the hand, the clever placement of a noise cancellation microphone, and the amazing photos that it produces. So it does deserve sticking up for, I think.
The important thing from this event is that Nokia is moving very well and very strongly in the direction of making things a lot easier for developers through Qt, through web, and through the vast improvement they're making in terms of promoting applications with devices through Ovi Store.
Still happy with your choice of word is Qt?
Yeah, I think all of that's Qt.
David, you had awkward earlier. Has it been awkward?
No, it's been handled very smoothly. Well done, Ansi.
And Rafe, of course, said Symbian 3. Okay, what did you know?
Well, I think I may have had some idea of what was coming, and it clearly is, you know, about the awesome foursome running on Symbian 3.
But of course, now everybody else is looking at Symbian 3 in that different light.
I hope people will look at Symbian 3 in a new light and say it's not just an incremental upgrade. It really is, you know, a new engine in the car, as Ansi put it. Don't look at the dashboard, look at the complete picture. And hopefully that's what people will take away from Nokia World. It's, you know, it's a big, big step forward for Nokia. And people need to appreciate just what an impact that can have when you're a global company like Nokia, with the reach and the distribution and the scale that we talk about so much. So I think it's been a very good day. Look forward to hearing and seeing more tomorrow.
There we go. So that is your All About Symbian Insight special from this year's first day at Nokia World 2010. I am Ewan Spence. Joining me we had
Rafe Blanford,
Richard Blow,
and David Gilson,
and a whole bundle of guests as well. Links on the website where we can get them sorted out overnight will be at www.allaboutsymbian.com. You're welcome to leave your comments. We're running Discuss now, so get yourselves in there and give us more feedback. Nokia World carries on for another day, I suspect, where Rafe and I are just going to switch our microphone on and stop people and see what happens. Then, if you've got any snap questions that you want to get us answered or have a look around, then please do get in touch with us. The easiest way would probably be through the All About Symbian Twitter account, which is @AAS. And the rest of the team, you already know the rest of the team's Twitter account. I'm not going to go through it then. And Rafe is giving me kill signs. So, bye-bye.